Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 19th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, extreme aging. Zot O'Connor shares an experiment with us at the Homebrewers Conference in Seattle. How will 2 years of bad treatment stand up against a cellar-aged beer? If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And believe it or not, there are still just a handful of brewer's logbooks still in stock. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing video page on Facebook, facebook.com/basicbrewing. And thanks again to everybody clicking on the amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, instead of going straight to Amazon, go to our website first, basicbrewing.com, and click on the Amazon logo, and that will take you to amazon.com. And then whatever you purchase, we'll get a little chunk of that, and it won't cost you any extra. That's the beauty of it. And you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we appreciate your support greatly. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And again, it won't cost you any extra, but we get a little chunk of that. So, good deals. We can you can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores. And we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, as far as I know. And we're on the the Stitcher app as well. If you haven't seen it already, check out the latest episode of Basic Brewing Video. Steve, Andy, and I wander the floor of Club Night at the National Homebrewers Conference. We were able to sample a couple of experiments while we were there, including a hot one with one of Steve's recipes brewed by one of the club members there. Very cool. Believe it or not, I think I'm all caught up on email. I know it's only a temporary situation, though. If you've written me an email and you haven't heard from me, check your spam folder, junk folder, whatever you call it, and I might be in there. Following our no-chill experiment last week, I got a couple of questions from listeners asking if no-chill brewers aerate their wort before pitching their yeast. And I said, yeah, I'm sure they do, but I asked Bob Stemsky just to be sure, and he said, I siphon the no-chilled wort into a fermentation bucket. I then add about 1 minute of oxygen while stirring with the oxidation wand. I use standard oxygen from Lowe's or any other big box hardware store. I have a stainless steel tube with an air stone on the end that connects to the oxygen. I use this as a stir stick to mix the firm cap or yeast into the bucket. So there you go. Yeast still needs oxygen to do the job of fermentation properly. And, you know, it's all boiled out in the boil. And if you put the hot wort in there, you probably don't want to aerate the hot wort going into the plastic container to avoid any fears of hot side aeration. But, you know, after it's cool and it's going into the fermenter, yeah, you need to add some O2 or shake it as normal. Jay from Rapid City, South Dakota writes, I just got done listening to the No Chill Experiment episode and was intrigued by your guest's question regarding cold break. Coincidentally, at the same time I was listening, I had just read about cold break out of a book from the Master Brewers Association of the Americas, MBAA. According to the MBAA, cold break occurs at about 158 degrees Fahrenheit and below, which would be around 70 C. So I would assume whether or not you're chilling yeast or chilling fast or very slow, it should still occur. In addition, they discuss several methods for removing cold break, which seem very similar to the no-chill method, like moving the hot wort to a starter tank and allowing it to sit for 16 hours or more to settle some of the trub out. However, as Bob mentioned, the MBAA also stated that some trub is a good thing for yeast health. I'm looking forward to trying this method myself when I run short of fermenter space to have a brew waiting in the wings. Well, thanks, Jay. I appreciate the information. And by the way, I've been in touch with Bob since last week, and he says he's pleased with the clarity of his lighter-colored beers after further study and reflection. So there you go. By the way, I have a goal today of ordering a plastic container to try no-chill brewing myself. I looked up the term jerry can, and it refers to a specific shape of container developed by the Germans before World War II, hence the name. If you remember World War II movies, you see the can of fuel on the back of Jeeps and such as that. Those are officially jerry cans. I'm not sure what to call the thing that I buy. It's more cylindrical, which is what Bob Stimsky has recommended. But maybe jerry can is generic enough, assuming it's not offensive to any Germans out there. Let me know if you're German, what you think of the nickname Jerry. George from Melbourne, Australia, writes, I've recently got back into brewing after being away from the hobby for about 10 years. I do all grain and use no-chill. Your episode on no-chill was really good. Thanks, George. The important thing to remember with no-chill is that you want to put the boiled wort into the container as soon as possible. The hotter, the better. Also, you want to get out as much air out of the container as possible. If the container is not filled to the top, you need to squeeze it to expel as much air as possible. You probably need someone to help you do this, and you probably need to be as careful as you can. George says, one person to squeeze and one to tighten the cap. I've also found that containers are often sold based on their nominal value. In Australia, containers sold as 20 liters, approximately 5 U.S. gallons, will actually hold 24 liters, approximately 6 U.S. gallons, when filled to the top. So if you buy a container for the hot wort, I suggest you do a test to see what volume it will hold when filling right up to overflowing. If you can do this at the shop before you buy, even better. And remember, this is me. Remember, you want to buy, not just any plastic container is going to work. You want to buy something that is thick enough and sturdy enough to hold that hot wort because the thin stuff can melt. George sent me a picture of his container, which is more of a cube. And George says the advantage of the cube over the jerry can is that the cap is at the highest water level. A normal jerry can, even a plastic one, has the cap at an angle, which makes it harder to get all the air out. Don't forget, you must rinse and sterilize before you use. The hot wort will kill most bugs, but it's good to play it safe. I appreciate the info, George. That's all good information. And, I continuously appreciate how smart and helpful you guys are. This show would definitely not be what it is without the collaboration that happens from around the world, and I greatly appreciate it. Let's get into the interview. This is the fourth and final audio show from the Seattle area. Zod O'Connor came up to our room with a mystery experiment. He had three bottles and no explanation. And as I teased in the intro, it turned out to be a follow-up on our extreme aging experiment. But at the time, Steve and Andy and I had no clue what we were about to taste. Zod O'Connor.
Howdy.
Welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you very much.
And thanks again for being our tour guide on Tuesday and Wednesday around the area. Oftentimes we come to these things and we go to these interesting cities. And since we're from out of town, and sometimes we're in a car, and we come in and we're like, well, the conference center was nice. You know, what was the city like? Well, the conference center is nice. But we got out. We went out in the countryside and saw beautiful countryside. We got to meet with the Mount Si Homebrewing Club out in Snoqualmie.
Yep.
And we saw a bear, which everybody is amused by. And then, we wanted to turn around and go see the bear again and take some photos. But you said that you were afraid of us all being killed, but I think you were just afraid of your truck being scratched.
Yes, it was mostly the truck. Blood is so hard to get out of the back seats of trucks.
But and then you were kind enough to take us down to the Pike Market and then you'll see it all on the video podcast, hopefully. But anyway, thank you very much for taking us around.
Well, I have to say, normally when we have guests, I'm not allowed to just try to drive to about 10 different pubs for on a given day, because at some point my wife points out that we have kids with us, or the guests don't like beer this much, and I was really excited to do that. Now, what I didn't realize is how much foodies you guys are, and we couldn't make it through the Pike's Market more than 10 feet without being diverted. It was harder to get you guys through that market than my five kids. So we made it to two pubs and a bar. Out of the 10 that I had listed. But I still had I had a great day myself, because I just don't get to do that.
Well, I think it's quality over quantity. I mean, in addition to seeing all the fresh fish and the cheese and the spices and all the things that we saw there, just being able to spend all the time at the Pike brew pub there. And, eating food and sampling things, and it was just wonderful. Just a wonderful and relaxing thing.
Yep.
And by the way, Steve Wilkes is here.
I'm here again.
Andy Sparks is here as well.
It's always awesome to be on the show.
And Azad has an experiment for us. You did a what they call a poster session?
Yes. So we had last year they introduced the idea of poster sessions. And in scientific conferences, The idea of a poster session is often there's maybe a talk that's not doesn't make the cut to get into a full-fledged talk. But at other places, security conferences, they often have quick talks, lightning round talks. The idea is it might be something that takes up a full hour of talk and all the rigmarole. So we targeted posters more along that line here this year. But we had a session about it. It was just the hospitality session. And so we had four of us. Each had posters lined up, and I had one, and Steve Antok, who was running the event, said, I know I can count on you for a poster. And I said, absolutely, Steve, I can do a poster, because and I realized something, I couldn't do one. And I was struggling to pick one of my experiments to do a poster on, and I couldn't, and so I finally did a poster about experiments, and about why to experiment, and I had some of the experiments that I'd done with you guys that were referenced in there. Chris Colby was referenced in there. I actually have a picture of him on my board. But then I brought all my beers for experiments, and I had 60-some-odd bottles representing about five different experiments. And I cut myself less than half of the bottles I found in my cellar, because when you do these experiments, you do, say, a small batch of 6 to 9 beers, and you do 2 or 3 taste tests with various people. Then you have 4 to 5 beers left of that, which might be good beers. It might be drinkable, but you'd hate to drink those not comparing with them, because that was the value of the experiment. So now you have 15 or 20 beers sitting there waiting for the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And this is a good opportunity. And I realized I had an experiment that I meant to bring up with you guys, because you guys are, once again, directly responsible for it. So what we're going to do is we're going to compare 3 beers. All I'm going to tell you is that I just want you to taste what's the difference. It shouldn't be a very difficult one like before. No magic in this one, but you guys will. I won't even test your palate. I know you've had a full day of more tasting, and this one shouldn't be difficult. So we'll start with number one.
Number one.
And you don't have to go into high details.
So all we're doing is
taste and compare.
Pick the different one.
They'll probably all taste a little bit different, actually. Just to taste what you really taste different between the two, and it shouldn't be subtle.
And it should be a taste, instead of an aroma quality.
Might be both.
Okay,
might be both.
And what's the style? Is this a single style across all three?
It
samples?
Is my my typical beer that I do for experimentation. It's just an all Cascade pale ale. So I use nothing but Cascade, just a light malt bill, just enough to give it a pale color. And it's good for experimenting, because it was easy for me to make repeatedly. And that's why I chose this one.
Okay.
I'm going to reserve comments until I...
Yeah, it's mostly a compare. You can't really comment yet.
Okay, so this is the first one.
Right, number two coming around.
Two.
This is a lightning round.
Yeah, this one's going to be fast, unlike my other ones where I make you taste 6 different ones and pick out the marshmallow.
Okay. These are tasty beers.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is shining outside. After it has been raining for the past day and a half.
Breaking out number three.
Number three. Trying to do color commentary as we're...
Yeah, for those who don't know, we warned everybody the weather was going to be bad during the conference. The 2 days that we were out and about were absolutely gorgeous, call sucker weather. The homebrewers are okay to come move here, but you always worry that people come here during the summer and then they move here and then they complain. And but homebrewers, it's okay to bring more up here. And I will say that today was the opposite. This was the rain that you have to explain to people. That's not normal Seattle rain. That's monsoon Georgia rain.
Pretty heavy rain.
Yeah,
that is not ordinary rain for here. And now it's absolutely gorgeous. But somebody went back to a hotel to grab his jacket to meet us at lunch, and the difference in time that he went to get the jacket and we dodged it, he got soaked.
Yeah,
because it cut loose even worse. But in that period of time.
Yeah, the other day we were watching out the window and it was like drizzling, just this little drizzle. And people were just running around, or not even running, just walking around, most of them without a raincoat or umbrella or anything. Like nothing was happening. But today it got a little heavier.
All right.
Now we've done the weather. The traffic and sports is coming up on the fives. And we...
So I'm curious if you guys detect any strong difference between any of the beers.
To me, the third one is a bit more different from the first two, if that makes any sense.
I think that it's drier. It's the first two seem a little maltier to me, and then the last one seems a little drier and crisper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The second one seems like it has a fairly pronounced brown sugar note to me. I get a brown sugar, turbinado sugar kind of thing going in it. But I actually get that in all three beers, but the second one pretty strongly.
Yeah, it seems like to me that the second one has a kind of a darker aroma. Or maybe a dark fruit. But they're lightly colored beers, but the third one is kind of more citrusy and kind of crisp from the first two.
About what you get, Andy?
Yeah, I think that's right. The first couple were more rounder, more mouthfeel. Last one seemed to be a little drier and crisper, a little more effervescent, maybe.
Yeah. What he said.
Right. Now, I'll explain the real purpose of this experiment was this is what you do when you pull back your refrigerator and realize the cold, room temperature, cold, hot experiment beers, where you try to find something hot from basic brewing, you suddenly realize they're still sitting there in the coils of your refrigerator. You go, what do I do with this? And you go, those guys are coming to town in 5 days. So you make them taste it to see if there's... This is now running on 2 years.
Oh, wow.
This is the experiment that you... One of the first experiments you did.
So the aging experiment?
It was the storage experiment. The
aeration?
No, not hot side aeration, but store one set of bottles hot. Store one set of bottles room temperature and one set of bottles cold, and then one set of bottles move in between.
Right.
I couldn't find a cold beer left. But I knew I had the room temperature one because I have this is Seattle. When you have a cellar, it's just the same temperature year round. That's beer number three, which you detected as being sharper. Oddly, one and two are both pretty much about the same. They've sat at the literally. This is Seattle. The only place I could find warm in the house was the refrigerator, the freezer coils. It's the only place I can guarantee being warm year round because or at that time it was going to be 6 months was the target date. And so I found those and went, well, I don't know what to... It's like I said at the beginning, what do you do with these beers? Well, you take it to the guys that made you do this. Because it's your fault I did this.
So the third one was room temperature.
Let's say cellar temperature. Okay, so almost 64, 65 year-round.
And the other two were heat-stressed, essentially? Or
yeah, heat-stressed. Yeah, stored hotter and heated on a... I brewed the beer because I made sure you guys didn't see the label, but May 9th, 2010. So literally,
oh my.
A little over 2 years. It's a hoppy pale ale. These should, oddly, these should both, all three just be destroyed.
You know, the third one is a drinkable beer. And I think that it's, you said there was Cascade?
It was all Cascade. You know, it's at a pale ale level, not an IPA yeah. level, so not the ton of hops that you get in there.
Yeah. I think it's a clean, crisp, Cascade-y pale ale, in my opinion. As these are warming up, and of course now, you know, now that you've said, I can say, but the first two, yeah, the second one especially, I'm getting kind of a, I think I said dark fruit, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
So I'm not making it up.
Is this kind of a burnt sugar, thing out of it? So.
Yeah. And it's not disgusting, but it's not, in comparison to the third beer, it's unpleasant.
I would absolutely agree. And if you go back to that, your episode is, I'd actually just come back from a long trip in Vietnam when you guys did that. And I remember I tasted beer in the middle of nowhere, up in North Vietnam, along a river that you had to hike 12 miles to get to. And they had beer there. And I remember pulling the beer out with my father-in-law and I realized, wow, I'm going to have a tough time drinking this. Now, he's an old time, grew up drinking whatever, and he said, I can get through it. And I said, I'm only drinking this because I want to explore what this flavor is because I don't like it. And it was definitely, I said, well, that was the same flavor I got off the hop bottle. And what's interesting is I think that's less than what it was. I think it mellowed out. And Steve, you said burnt sugar.
Yeah.
And that's more what I get. And what's interesting is I get that from a couple countries I visit is Canada and Australia. Both have an odd aftertaste to their beers that I have about four or five during a couple day trip, after about the fifth beer I've had there, I just find myself not wanting a beer because it kind of leaves a cloying, just back taste in my mouth. And I think what I've been getting there is heat damaged beers on those trips. I'm just picking that up right now live as we were doing that. I went, that's it, the Vietnam beer that was destroyed, and I can taste it. And I got that immediately. But what's interesting is that has sat for 2 years. I think it's a combination of heat and aging for those beers, which should have been fresh and refrigerated. I mean, those are, you know, I'm sitting in Vancouver, Canada when I'm having this happen. But it's something about their processing in those two countries that have always triggered that same flavor test.
Well, you know, just a little side story. I've worked in a few liquor stores in my life, and I always got a kick out of it when, like the, Coors, they deliver Coors beer cold. It's well handled from the brewery to the shipping to the liquor store. And then they would deliver it to the package store, and they would put it in the back of the room, and they would not refrigerate it. Mm-hmm. And so you'd have this beer that would set in the summertime, you know, it'd be 110 degrees back there. Well, good God, no wonder the beer's no good. So it's interesting that, you know, you're talking about that same. I mean, your story reminded me of that, of just seeing them pull those, you know, pallets of beer off and just stick them in the back of the warehouse.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, you know, it's similar to, you know, a lot of the big hoppy beers and stuff that I like. They seem to fall off, and they sometimes end up with this kind of same sort of burnt sugar kind of. It's just not really a super, super clean thing. And so I think it may be part of the same syndrome, right? You know, it's part of beers as they oxidize, as they age, they, you know, they start to taste, well, off.
Yeah, and you know that, you know, when you have a really giant beer that can oxidize and get that burnt sugar and all the raisiny stuff going, and it's big enough to handle it, the oxidation seems to be okay. But when you have a less beer, then that burnt sugar stuff just tastes wrong. It's just in the wrong place. It's just like it just shouldn't be there. Because these beers are relatively thin, so it doesn't have the backbone to hold that up. So that was an interesting comment of yours, Andy.
Yeah, I think that in smelling and tasting, as these are warming up, smelling and tasting the first two, close your eyes and pretend it's a Belgian double. Think of the dark fruits and the dark fruits of my comment, and the dark sugar, the Terminato sugar of your comment, Steve. Think of a Belgian double.
I was going to say that's exactly what we had. They, Spiegel had their own glassware here this week, and somebody brought that up and got our at our club hospitality. We had our oak-aged Belgian strong double. And you, I picked up those exact notes. As soon as you said that, I went, that's it. And that, by the way, those glasses are amazing. We took two beers and just hit it with that second glass, and it was just amazing. And it really brought that up. And you're right, that was the backbone of that smell, but it had a lot more vanilla note to it than the burnt note.
Maybe the on-purpose double is a little better. Do not try to make a double by aging a pale ale by the refrigerator coil for 2 years.
It's a double. It's technically a Belgian dark strong.
Poor man's double.
Well, I'm going to go back to the third. Yeah, it's bright. And the Cascade flavor comes through, and I think it's a tasty. I'd drink that beer. The other two, as they're warming up, especially, I'm not too fond of.
And I,
so I wonder if, because I do find the number three to be slightly drier. It seemed maybe have a little more bubble on the tongue when I tasted it. And I wonder if maybe by putting the beers on the coils, which would tend to get hot. Pretty darn hot, really, at least as it cycles. It may have killed the yeast that sits on the bottom of the bottles, whereas the one that was left at cellar temperature had its chance to continue to evolve in the bottle a little bit and, you know, end up with a little crisper character.
That's actually a really good point, because while they all had 2 weeks to prime per the experiment to prime properly, you know, the beers don't stop. I mean, they mostly stop, but they still keep evolving, you know, after 2 years. The thing I'm finding about the number three is that it actually has any aroma at all, and that it is crisp, and it's, you know, it is drinkable. And I normally would apologize for making you guys drink bad beers, but two things is you're the reason that I had them, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to get some really good beer in about 20 minutes around here at any given time. And that 20 minutes means is that you had to find your keys to get out the door.
Yeah, so we can clean our palate with some good beers. Well, the hop character has certainly disappeared from the first two.
Yeah,
there's no hop character at all, and it's all about that kind of dark sugar, kind of fruity kind of thing, oxidized. You know, you could pick it, if you say oxidized, you say yes, oxidation, because there's that maybe a little dark cherry kind of a thing going on too. Stale, not good. But, and it would be interesting to have had a refrigerated one this whole, you know, for this whole time. But we don't have that luxury. But do you remember that? Is this, since you've brewed this beer repeatedly as your experiment beer, is number three close to the character of a fresh example?
So when I did the experiment, unlike other folks who did hoppy beers, I found the room temperature beer to really pop the hops more than the refrigerated beer. And I think I'm finding that here. And but I think for me that my room temperature is cellar temperature, like I said, 65 or lower, which is, you know, for England, that's what you would store a beer at. And so I find it's a little less. I would definitely get a lot more Cascade flavor, a lot more of the citrus notes that aren't there. You know, not a lot different than the beer after a couple months when I have had a beer sit around a couple months. So really, I would say the difference between probably 3 months and 2 years cellar temperature is not that great. Mm. I mean, it isn't dramatically different. The actual difference between the heated beer after 3 months and 2 years, almost a little better. I think maybe it's settled out. And so I think that what tells me is that heating a beer kills it right, you know, just ruins the beer right away. And versus, if you had to leave it at a cellar temperature or lower because you couldn't get to it, I wouldn't worry about it. But if your beer's getting hot in the sun if it's getting hot in the sun in your car, I might worry more about it now.
And what's the gravity of this beer, or what's the ABV?
So, because I anal retentive label here, I actually have it this time. The OG was 1050. The final gravity was 1008, so a 5.6% ABV.
Mm-hmm. Standard pale ale. It's very interesting. I think this is, it makes me feel good about our abilities that we're able to pick these out. But it wasn't hard. It was not a difficult distinction to make.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, I just don't know what to say about them. I mean, you know, they just sat around for a few years in not good condition. So, you know, it's what you would expect.
And, you know, this is one of those experiments that anyone can do on any batch they produce, right? You can save three bottles and do this, right? And mm-hmm. prove to yourself, and maybe you'll find that some styles lend themselves to maybe a little more abuse, you know, like an old stock ale or something like that.
Yeah.
Might be just the ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah, or if you had a big old Belgian, big old dark Belgian, maybe a little bit more of the fruity, dark sugar kind of a thing would be an interesting component.
I think Andy points out something really well. Of the experiments you've done over the years, this is the one, if you bottle it all, you can do this. Mm-hmm. And almost like a wort stabilization test, it's almost like you should do one for every batch. Not for hot. We know hot's going to ruin most beers. But I think the interesting question that you brought up is refrigeration versus cellar that big of a deal? And I think it was a bit inconclusive at the podcast, but I think it's going to be style dependent and probably your own house temperature dependent. I think that'd probably be a smart thing for any brewer who's going to have bottles that is, you're going to sit there a long time in a place. You'll find out, is it going to ruin your beer to leave it? If you have a cellar versus your refrigerator, or perhaps, you know, if you have a shed or just a room upstairs, you know what? Set two beers out and give it 3 months. Mm-hmm. And go back and do a side-by-side and find out how, you know, what the impact was.
Yeah, and I think
generally, my batches don't last 3 months.
and I think that, and again, this illustrates the point that if you value your beer, you should take care of your beer.
Absolutely.
And you should at least have it in a stable, cool cellar environment, if not in the fridge, once it's reached its sort of peak. You know, because each batch has a different level of bottle mm-hmm. conditioning that it has to. You don't want to put green beer, quote unquote, green beer in the fridge. But once it's bottle conditioned, once it tastes good, you know, maybe you want it. If you've got the space, put it in the fridge.
James, you sound suspiciously like a home brewer who's trying to justify to his spouse or her spouse why it is you're going to have a special refrigeration unit for one particular room in the house.
That's right.
And it just happens to be near lagering temperatures.
That's right. Yeah. It's scientifically proven that I must protect my investment in this home brew, that we've got to get this. What kind of fridge do you have, Andy?
I have a True. And a Trollson.
Yeah, we need some of those. We need a Magic Beer Fridge, hon.
That 7-Eleven that's going out down the street, maybe I can get that walk-in. Yeah. Put it on the back deck.
Oh, well, this has been good. This has been very, very interesting. As always, not, you know, fear of the unknown, I had no idea what we're going to be doing. And, you know, I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, we're going to the marshmallow priming with the thing and the but no, this is I enjoyed this quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I probably won't see you guys much after now. So I just want to say thank you guys for coming out to Seattle and coming out. And if I don't see you, I'll look forward to seeing you in Philadelphia.
All right. Well, thanks for having us out. And again, thanks for the hospitality.
Absolutely. Anytime you guys come out, let me know.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. And Zot, anytime you want to come to Arkansas,
yeah,
you know we'll take good care of you.
Yep. Absolutely.
Cheers.
Thanks again to Zot O'Connor, Steve Wilkes, and Andy Sparks. It was very interesting how much those beers changed over the past couple of years. And as I said on the show, I would have no problem drinking the cellar-aged ones. The cellar-aged one was nice and, you know, kind of crisp and hoppy. But the hot ones, not so much. Well, I guess this means that I'll have to get back to work and gather some new audio content for next week. We still have video from Seattle to use on Basic Brewing Video, so watch out for that. And we're also brewing up some fun content locally for the video podcast as well, so stay tuned. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say hi-de-ho, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is now available to order. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our basic brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Runaway Minecraft Youth T-shirt. Black. I'm going to show that to my kids. And Game 3567 Mini Underwater Light Show and Fountain, which looks pretty cool. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next week, everybody. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.